I think the words that come to mind is that it is intense. It is also exhilarating from the perspective of being an organization of journalists that are really motivated by covering the most exciting stories, and there are a lot of them today. And it is actually, you know, the pace of news, it is relentless in Washington, and so it can also be exhausting.
Damit hat Politico-Chefin Goli Shekoslami beim Eröffnungsgipfel der Medientage München wohl auf den Punkt gebracht, was viele gerade empfinden, die in dieser Medienbranche arbeiten. Und es ist das Gefühl, dass das Motto der MTM 25 auf den Punkt bringt: What the future? Aber an Tag 1 ging es nicht nur um die ziemlich besorgniserregende Analyse des Ist-Zustands, sondern auch darum, wie wir damit umgehen können. Dazu hören wir in dieser Folge unter anderem Wolfram Weimer, Jagoda Marinic, Jeff Jarvis und im zweiten Teil ein Gespräch mit Evan Shapiro über die Creator Economy. Sehr interessant. Jetzt geht's los.
This is Media Now. Das Update für alle, die Medien machen.
Mein Name ist Luca Schöne und ich begrüße euch zu dieser Folge unseres Podcasts. Ja, es ist that time of year. Ich sitze hier im Podcast-Studio im House of Communication. Tag 1 der Medientage ist gerade zu Ende gegangen, wo ich das hier aufnehme, und die Nacht der Medien geht gleich los. Aber ich fasse für euch gerne noch ein paar Highlights des ersten Konferenztags zusammen, damit ihr, wenn ihr nicht da sein konntet, aus welchen Gründen auch immer, einen kleinen Eindruck der Konferenz bekommt. Und dieser erste Tag hatte es, wie gewohnt, in sich, vor allem mit dem großen Eröffnungsgipfel, wo auch BLM-Präsident Dr. Thorsten Schmiegel seine Gedanken zum Motto What the Future geäußert hat.
Ich schaue in die USA, die einst stabilste Demokratie, wo sich mittlerweile die staatlich eingesetzte Aufsicht in die Programmgestaltung einmischt. Und bei uns in Europa, in Deutschland, können wir wirklich zufrieden sein. Ich betrachte mit Sorge, dass auch bei uns immer mehr das Gefühl haben, sie können sich aus Angst vor Hass und Hetze am öffentlichen Diskurs nicht mehr beteiligen. Auch bei uns wenden sich immer mehr von den klassischen Medien ab, weil sie das Gefühl haben, sie sind nicht mehr repräsentiert, sie sind nicht mehr verstanden von den klassischen Medien. Und auch bei, oder gerade bei uns, gerät der öffentlich-rechtliche Rundfunk, der ja zur Ausgewogenheit verpflichtet ist, auch juristisch immer mehr unter Druck. Und über allem und gleichzeitig die wichtigste Frage: Wie sollen sich verlässliche Medien in Zukunft noch finanzieren? In einer Zeit, wo ich ganz klar sage, wo sie wichtiger sind, wo sie mehr gebraucht werden denn je, um eine funktionierende Demokratie, eine stabile Gesellschaft zu gewährleisten. Kurz, what the future?
Ja, what the future? Sicher auch ein Gedanke, der vielen kam, als sie die Nachricht aus dem Hause ProSiebenSat.1 gehört haben. Da wurde kurz vor den Medientagen bekannt, dass der neue Mehrheitseigner Media for Europe den kompletten Vorstand umbaut. Das war natürlich ein großes Thema bei den Medientagen, und Staatsminister für Kultur und Medien Dr. Wolfram Weimer hatte daher auch einen Gruß dabei in seiner Ansprache.
Ich weiß, 8 Minuten ist für die Münchner Medientage schon sehr viel und in diesen Zeiten sowieso, denn in 8 Minuten verdient Google 6 Millionen Euro. Und am Ende der 8 Minuten werden es sogar ein bisschen mehr sein als am Anfang, weil Google eben wächst, diese Riesenmaschine. Und für die Dauer der Medientage wird Google so viel Umsatz gemacht haben wie ProSiebenSat.1-Konzern im ganzen Jahr. Womit ich beim ersten meiner 3 Grüße des Tages bin. Der erste geht aus brandaktuellen Gründen an Silvio Pier Berlusconi, den ich herzlich über die Alpen grüße. Lieber Herr Berlusconi, wir hatten intensive und am Ende auch gute Gespräche sowohl im Kanzleramt in Berlin als auch insbesondere hier in München mit unserem Ministerpräsidenten Söder. Vielleicht, lieber Herr Berlusconi, kennen Sie unseren Söder noch nicht so genau. Sie sollten aber wissen, dass er ein echter Löwe ist. Und er hat ein besonderes Augenmerk auf starke Medien, weil er wirklich um sie kämpft. Und darum ist es gut, dass Sie uns versprochen haben, den ProSieben-Standort München wirklich zu stärken. Wir werden darauf ein Augenmerk haben. Wir sind uns sicher, dass Sie die Zusagen einhalten und die bayerische Medienaufsicht und unseren Löwen glücklich sehen wollen. Das ist klug und gut für ProSieben, das ist aber auch wichtig für unseren Medienstandort in München und Deutschland insgesamt.
Ja, besagter Löwe, Markus Söder, war auch beim Gipfel der Medientage zu Gast und ihm ging es um ein Thema, das Weimar zu Beginn seiner Ausführungen gerade auch angesprochen hat, die Marktmacht großer Konzerne wie Google.
Wir reden über Wettbewerber und Partner, die alle 5 Nummern größer sind als wir. Wir haben das zugelassen, aus welchen Gründen auch immer, oder die stärker sind. Und deswegen müssen wir uns in diesem Wettbewerb bewähren. Natürlich können wir mit Regulationen arbeiten, natürlich können wir das bei uns machen. Aber jetzt schauen Sie mal ehrlich. Wir haben in Bayern die hervorragende Landeszentrale für neue Medien. Von Professor Ring auf den Weg gebracht, Schmiegeheut großartig geführt. Wir entscheiden über kleine Frequenzen für Radiosender. In Bamberg, in Aschaffenburg, in Nürnberg, in Traunstein, alles super. Wir haben Medienstaatsverträge, die dauern ungefähr ein halbes, dreiviertel Jahr bis ein Jahr, bis man ein Komma ändern kann. Weil wir Bundesländer sehr genau drauf schauen. Wir Bayern schauen drauf, dass es unseren Interessen entspricht. Die Nordrhein-Westfalen schauen drauf, dass es ihren Interessen entspricht. Und vielen anderen ist es wurscht, weil die wenig Medienstandorte haben. So, alles gut. Aber die Geschwindigkeit und die Regulation ist ja geradezu lächerlich, wenn wir anschauen, dass, wenn ich meine Kinder frage, alle volljährig, Studium, alles, frage, wie informiert ihr euch in erster Linie? Dann ist die Kernantwort über Plattformen und da schaut ganz wenig jemand das normale Fernsehen, so wie ich noch erzogen bin. Ja. So, und deswegen ist die Dimension unserer Regulationskleinteiligkeit in Deutschland schon bei der Mediensache schlicht und einfach anachronistisch und wir bräuchten einen grundlegend anderen Ansatz. Und für Europa gesprochen ist so, mein Vertrauen in europäische Regulatorik speist sich aus den Erfahrungen mit anderen regulatorischen Feldern in Europa. Und die ist grausig, weil im Zweifelsfall es extreme enge Grenzen gibt. Ich bin ein Mensch, verzeihen Sie mir das, wenn ich das sage, ich glaube eher an die Freiheit anstatt an Regulatorik. Und ich würde lieber den Weg finden, dass wir durch mehr Investitionen, mehr Freiheit, eigene Gegenargumente setzen, Wettbewerb auf Augenhöhe stattfinden, mehr Möglichkeiten schaffen und die Regulatorik, wenn, dann so nutzen, um uns Wettbewerbsvorteile zu schaffen, aber nicht nur einfach in der Ecke beleidigt stehen und ärgerlich machen, da sind die anderen zu stark. Und man muss stärker werden, um mit den anderen auf Augenhöhe reden zu können. Das ist das einzige Bestreben, sonst geht diese Schiene immer weiter und ich habe keinen Bock, dass wir dauernd verlieren und hinterherlaufen.
Ja, es ist ein riesiger Spagat. Einerseits kann man der Marktmacht der großen Plattformen sicher nur etwas entgegensetzen, wenn man Kräfte bündelt, zusammenarbeitet und ja, auch Übernahmen wie Sky durch RTL oder ProSiebenSat.1 durch Media for Europe sind ein Zeichen dafür. Andererseits ist gerade das Lokale, Markus Söder hat es auch angesprochen, oft die Stärke. Und gerade dort wäre Wirkmacht von seriösen Medien wichtig in polarisierten Zeiten. Ein Thema, das auch Goli Shekoslami von Politico sehr umtreibt.
I don't like to be overly pessimistic, but it is an increasingly polarized world and an increasingly polarized environment in the United States. You know, I was speaking with someone last night, and, you know, I think that in the United States, and there was actually a story about it in my feed this morning, you know, one of the main reasons for this polarization, you know, there are multiple reasons, one of them being actually the complete sort of decimation of the local news ecosystem in the United States. So, you know, over the last, you know, 20 years, nearly 40% of local news organizations in the United States have gone away. And I think that, you know, the fact that the only access to news is national news, which is usually the more polarizing conversations and not local news that really brings the community together, I think is a challenge. And so I talk a lot about, you know, in America, and think a lot about how do we make sure that we are supporting the local ecosystem so that there is healthy conversation in the community.
Ja, und damit kommen wir so ein bisschen zu einem der roten Fäden, die es am ersten Tag der Medientage gab, zumindest den Teil, den ich beobachten konnte. Ich kann ja auch mir nicht alles angucken. Na, Spaß beiseite. Das Thema Nähe zum Publikum, Austausch, in den Communities verankert sein, vielfältige Perspektiven abdecken, wegkommen vom reinen Reichweitendenken. Solche Themen kamen häufiger zur Sprache bei den Medientagen an Tag 1, unter anderem auch bei Jeff Jarvis, dem emeritierten Journalismusprofessor aus New York und wohl einer der profiliertesten Journalismusexperten aus den USA.
And I think that I presumed that scale mattered, that size was important, that if you weren't big, you didn't matter. I think that's a dire mistake in society. That's not a pluralistic view of society. That's a monolithic view of society. So number one, and I started a program with my colleague Kerry Brown in engagement journalism. I think we have to change the relationship that we have with the public. Number two, I think we have to bring media down to a human scale. Number three, this is a hard lesson. I think we have to teach ourselves that we are not in the content business. Content is a Gutenberg era notion. It fills things. It has a beginning and an end, an alpha and an omega. It's a logical progression. And I don't think that we're in the content business. I think in journalism, we are a service. We are a service to communities, and that we need to help communities not only understand themselves, that's our ego, but also feel heard. Be able to talk, be able to communicate.
Ja, wie wichtig ihm diese Punkte sind, versteht man, glaube ich, ganz gut, wenn man seine Analyse des Ist-Zustands in den Medien der USA kennt. Die ist, ja, harmlos ausgedrückt, nicht gut. Oder, wie er es sagt, die Situation ist
fucked. My message is not cheery, it's depressing. Democracy is dying in America. And mass media are dead. They don't know it, but they're dead. And the total picture for media in the US is troubling from a business sense, we know that. Most American newspaper chains are now owned by hedge funds, which do not invest. Radio is a dead medium. Television, the audience is geriatric, is old and dying. We now see that the Ellisons, whom I call the mini Murdochs, have taken over CBS and are bringing in far-right management there. They're likely to take over CNN as well. Our escape from that should be social media, but now, of course, they control TikTok. Meanwhile, the Murdochs spent $3.3 billion to keep their far-right wing publications far-right wing. And the most depressing of all to me is that, in my view, the New York Times is failing us. When Trump was in the Oval Office demanding that his enemies be prosecuted and his legal people just stood by, the New York Times called this a diorama of power dynamics. No, it's fascism. At the Charlie Kirk funeral, they called it an extraordinary fusion of government and Christianity. No, it's white Christian nationalism. They said, about Epstein, they said the latest revelations so complicate Trump's sweeping denials about Epstein. Meanwhile, if you read Die Zeit, their headline on the same story was Lüge zu viel.
Ja, sagen, was ist, das alte Motto, was wir in Deutschland kennen, das klappt in seinen Augen in den US-Medien nicht mehr. Deutsche Qualitätsmedien hingegen hebt er als positives Beispiel hervor, wie das Beispiel von der Zeit gerade gezeigt hat. Und noch einen Punkt hat er, nämlich, dass Journalisten oft sagen, wir wollen Vertrauen zurückgewinnen.
I hear journalists all the time saying, how do I rebuild trust? That presumes you ever had it. And for a lot of Americans, they didn't trust the media. If you, our famous anchor on television news named Walter Cronkite, he would end every broadcast saying, and that's the way it is. For if you were Black or Latino or immigrant or LGBTQ or disabled, it wasn't the way it was for you. You weren't represented there. Mass media was the media of people who look like me, old white men. So we didn't have this trust. Voices were not heard there.
Ja, klingt fast so ein bisschen nach einer Ursünde, die er dem Journalismus da vorwirft. Und auch mit Blick auf deutsche Medien gibt es ja diesen Kritikpunkt, dass viele Perspektiven in Debatten gar nicht vorkommen und wir uns immer nur auf die Extremen fokussieren. Beim Medientage-Gipfel war es Schriftstellerin und Podcasterin Jagoda Marinic, die dieses Thema aufgegriffen hat. Und sie hat dabei auch Markus Söder widersprochen, der vorher im Gipfel ein Interview, das er dem Portal News gegeben hat, in einem Atemzug nannte damit, dass er auch der Taz zum Beispiel ein Interview geben würde.
Ja, ich beobachte, dass wir das tatsächlich sehr einfallslos reproduzieren. Also dass in weiten Teilen inzwischen wir Spin-offs nehmen oder das Phänomen haben, dass das Medium, das Herr Söder vorhin hufeisenartig gegenüber der Taz sah, das möchte ich gerne nutzen, um meine Meinungsfreiheit und die Meinungsfreiheit nochmal kundzutun, dass ich das nicht richtig finde, dass ich da sehr große Unterschiede sehe. Aber dass wir Medien haben, die inzwischen genau das wollen, was man in den USA sieht. Man hat irgendeinen Spin, man setzt ihn medial und treibt dann eigentlich auch die anderen Medien, die sozialen Medien vor sich her. Und ich sage immer, es ist dann wie ein Ping-Pong. Wir hatten das schon bei der ersten Amtszeit von Donald Trump. Er wachte morgens auf, schoss irgendeinen Tweet raus und die ganze Welt geht ab da im Zwei-Stunden-Tag hier Ping-Pong, Ping-Pong. Und da sind wir gerade. Und für mich ist die große Aufgabe der Medien und aller, die damit zu tun haben, auch in den sozialen Medien, wie komme ich da einen Schritt drüber? Also wie gelange ich in die Metaebene zu dem Ping-Pong, das im Moment eigentlich rechtsautoritäre, rechtsextreme und rechtsaußenkräfte medial sehr geschickt mit Flood the Zone, this shit praktizieren? Wie kommen wir da raus und ins Agenda-Setting? Und das ist im Moment für mich die Krise der Diskussion. Wir reproduzieren im Moment tatsächlich nur die Polarisierung, behaupten zwar immer, wir wollen da was dagegen tun, stärken aber immer pro-con. Wir haben sehr viel mehr zu diskutieren als pro-con. Aber um dahin zu kommen, brauchen wir wirklich ein Stück Ruhe, ein Stück Metaebene und wirklich bei jeder Nachricht sich zu fragen, muss ich mich jetzt von dem vorantreiben lassen? Wie werde ich Herr dessen im Sinne von, wie breite ich den Winkel, wie erweitere ich den Winkel? Und das ist gerade für mich schon die Krise der Diskussionskultur, aber keine, die wir nicht meistern könnten.
Ja, mehr Perspektiven, Debatten, nicht nur schwarz-weiß denken, mit den Menschen in den Austausch gehen, andere Meinungen aushalten, das sind die Rezepte. Übrigens auch für Oliver Kalkofe. Der Satiriker und Comedian war auch beim Gipfel zu Gast und hat das ja auf die ihm eigene Art dort ausgedrückt.
Die Angst des Senders vor dem Shitstorm, die gab es schon immer. Das wäre ein schöner Buchtitel eigentlich. Aber wir sollten an die alte Regel denken, wer im Shitstorm panisch zappelt, lässt die Scheiße nur noch mehr spritzen und macht alles viel schlimmer. Wer?
Ja.
Wer einfach aufrecht stehen bleibt, kann sich danach abduschen und steht immer noch. Merken wir uns das vielleicht und akzeptieren wir auch einfach einmal eine Kontroverse, auch wenn sie nervt. Ich sag mal, na und? Ja, Menschen dürfen sich auch mal erregen. Versuchen wir doch aber einfach mal als Medien die Menschen wiederum auch wirklich ernst zu nehmen und ihnen auch die Möglichkeit zum eigenen Denken anzubieten, indem wir vielleicht nicht immer alles immer mehr vereinfachen und verkürzen und auf reißerische Schlagzeilen reduzieren. Vielleicht sollten wir mal lernen, nicht immer freiwillig auf jeden Empörungszug sofort aufzuspringen und die Pfeife zu tröten, sondern vielleicht erst einmal einen Shitstorm selbst zu hinterfragen, bevor wir ihn mit dem medialen Ventilator großflächig verteilen. Ja? Denn, ja. Denn es ist ganz klar, das wirkt natürlich dumm, klickt gut. Das weiß jeder. Ja, es bringt Kohle und Quote. Aber wir müssen uns irgendwann auch nicht wundern, wenn die Leute den Ball genau so weiterschießen, wie wir ihn zugespielt haben.
Und gleichzeitig gilt es bei all dem, den Konkurrenzkampf mit den Digitalriesen aufzunehmen. Wir haben es am Anfang gehört, mit Kooperation, mit kluger Regulierung und mit Investitionen. Und alles um die so entscheidende Medien- und Meinungsvielfalt zu bewahren. Das war das große Thema bei den Medientagen am ersten Tag. Na, wenn sonst nichts ist. Ja. Und das alles, warum, Markus Söder?
Ohne Medien wäre es saulangweilig und deswegen brauchen wir sie dringend.
Ja, so viel zu tun für die Medienbranche. Und da haben wir noch gar nicht richtig über künstliche Intelligenz gesprochen in diesem Podcast. Sehr gut, das kommt auch noch. Aber keine Sorge, auch KI ist selbstverständlich ein roter Faden, ein großes Thema bei den Medientagen. Da gibt's dann in der nächsten Folge und kommenden ein bisschen mehr dazu. Ich freue mich, dass auch in diesem Jahr wieder ein paar Gäste hier im Podcast-Studio bei den Medientagen München vorbeischauen, damit wir noch ein bisschen vertiefend über das ein oder andere Thema sprechen können. Und den Anfang macht dieses Jahr dabei Evan Shapiro. Evan ist zum dritten Mal schon zu Gast bei den Medientagen, was uns wirklich sehr, sehr freut. Man kann, denke ich, sagen, dass er das Medienuniversum, um es mal so zu nennen, analysiert wie kein zweiter. Über ihn heißt es, dass er Entwicklungen lange vor allen anderen sieht. Und warum ist das so? Weil er unglaublich viele Daten über die Medienwelt auswertet und dann in seinen berühmten, bekannten Karten, in seinen Maps darstellt, die dann dieses ein Teilgebiet des Medienuniversums, ist ein schwieriges Wort, darstellen soll. Wenn ihr das noch nicht gesehen habt, stelle ich mal einen Link in die Shownotes, da könnt ihr euch das mal anschauen. Yeah, and now for that occasion, I switch to English to welcome the official, unofficial cartographer of the media universe. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Evan, we speak before you talk on stage at Medientage today. You talk about the new normal of media industry. What is the new normal of media industry?
The new normal of the media industry is this collision or melding of what we've traditionally called the creator economy, which is media that's produced primarily or exclusively for social media and social video, and mainstream media. And these two ecosystems are melding into one. Even for mainstream popular culture like movies or television or music, the vast majority of the excitement initially for that intellectual property starts on social platforms. And increasingly for consumers under the age of millennials, and I think it's important to understand that 70% of the world's population are millennials and younger now. Those consumers aren't just learning about popular culture on social platforms. They're actually consuming more and more of mainstream culture on social video, on TikTok, on YouTube, on Instagram, first, if not exclusively. And I think there's been resistance from mainstream media to allow that to happen. There's been resistance. You know, there's been this thought that, well, if they watch there, they'll never watch on the traditional platforms of broadcast or pay TV. And the answer to that is, for the most part, millennials, Gen Z, Gen A probably will not consume mainstream media the same way that their parents or their grandparents did. And so the new normal is a collision, is a melding, is a melting together of traditional media, television, film, radio, and creator economy platforms, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, into one ecosystem. I like to call it the affinity economy, where fandom is the primary objective and the primary motivator. But call it whatever you want. There is this new mixture of the two ecosystems.
About this fandom thing, we will talk later on a little bit, because I find it very interesting. You create your famous maps. Maybe the listeners saw one or two of them before. And your current map is a map about the creator ecosphere. And you said after you presented it, the term creator economy, it's understood. What do you mean by that? Why is it understood? And what is the creator economy? We talk a lot about them.
Yeah, I mean, there's that's a lot to unpack. Mostly what's understood or not understood about the creator economy is that it's just influencers doing makeup tutorials or, you know, kids doing dances. Increasingly, it is an ecosphere of artists. So podcasters, I think, are, in my mind, considered, you know, the quintessential creators. They are their own producers. Oftentimes, they're their own marketing agencies. Yeah. Often, they're their own sales agents. And so, you know, I think anyone who makes content and puts it out directly to their consumers, I would consider a creator. And I think, you know, if you look at someone like a Taylor Swift, who refinanced her entire song library to take it back from the mainstream publishers and then self-released her own concert movie.
Yeah.
Now, she's a huge star, but she self-funded it, self-released it, and it's now the most popular concert film of all time. That is a creator endeavor. Enoch Tag, who is a creator, kind of like the Mr. Beast of France, he climbed Mount Everest. He shot a feature documentary. He spent a lot of money on that documentary. He then released it into theaters and sold a lot of tickets and then released it onto YouTube. Yeah. He is a creator. He is a filmmaker. He is, that is a creator endeavor, even though it was released in mainstream theaters. So the reality of creators are, you know, people who are good at doing movies and television are also increasingly becoming major presence on creator platforms. And so I think this idea that you can either be a filmmaker or a creator is this dichotomy that doesn't really exist anymore. So that's thing number one. And then thing number two is, you know, Frontline, which is a documentary series in the United States put out by the public broadcaster there. They won the Academy Award for 20 Days in Mariupol 2 years ago. They put out their feature documentaries, which air on PBS. So the ZDF of the U.S., although much smaller in funding and audience, they put out these feature documentaries on PBS and on YouTube at the same exact time. Yeah. So they are a creator too. And in reality, their audience is twice as large on YouTube as it is on PBS, and it's 2 to 3 generations younger. So it's different audiences, different ways of consuming. But I would argue that the filmmakers and producers of Frontline are just as much creators as Ember Chamberlain is, or as Amelia de Moldenberg is, or as PewDiePie is. They just put out different types of different types of content.
So we're all in the same market, the traditional media companies now, and the creators, and even Taylor Swift is a creator, you say. So it's big market become.
I mean, when Martin Scorsese is going on TikTok and doing film trivia with his granddaughter, you know, the worlds are colliding, right? You know, he understands it. He's getting it. And I think, you know, this concept that movies are one thing and television is one thing and then YouTube and TikTok are another, that's true if you're 100 years old. It is no longer true if you're anything younger than that. There used to be, I talk a lot about the generation gap in media, that there's one ecosystem for millennials and younger and another for Xers and older. And that is generally true. Broadcast and regular traditional television is really dominated by Xers and older from a viewership standpoint. And social video is really dominated by millennials and younger from a viewership standpoint. But the fastest growing audience for YouTube on television are people over 50. So, you know, and millennials are now 45. And getting older every year. And Gen Zers are 30 and getting older every year. So their habits are becoming, it's just math, man. And there's this fear of finding out these things. Yeah. People don't want to recognize the data that's staring in front of them because it means we're getting older and we have to face our own mortality. I can get into the psychology of that another time. But, you know, Germany has this interesting market where you're one of the only countries on the planet where the majority of people aren't millennials and younger.
Yeah.
You are a super old.
We are a super old country. That's true.
So that's creating financial and social political pressures that you're seeing in your country. But what's going to happen is millennials and Gen Zers are going to become the majority very soon in the next couple of years. And when they do, when they run the government, when they run all the businesses, when they run all the households, when they make all the financial decisions, things are going to change. And in media in particular, especially now that the mandatory utility bill, as far as paying for pay TV as part of your rent, now that that's gone, yes, a lot of people are just signing up for the pay TV again, but 25-30% aren't. What are they going to do? And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens to Sky Deutschland and what happens to ProSieben and all these other entities over the next years as millennials turn 50 and Gen Zers turn 40. What's going to happen?
So you say it's simple math, and it is. I will agree on that. And nevertheless, many media companies are very skeptical when it comes to the term, we are part of the creator economy now. No. We are traditional media. We are journalists. That's a huge different thing. So which switch in mindset we need in the media industry?
Yeah, that's why I feel like talking about the creator economy is getting to be a bit old, because I think it denotes a time that doesn't really exist anymore, where there was a separation, where Reese Witherspoon wasn't a massive presence on Instagram.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, she's a massive movie star and she has a massive Instagram presence. That's somebody who interlopes between the two. Mr. Beast has a massive presence on YouTube and got paid $100 million to make a television show for Amazon. Jake Paul is a massive presence on YouTube and broke Netflix and has a show on HBO. So I think we have to realize that the old rules and the old kind of dichotomy and black and whiteness of the world no longer exists. That's why I'm pushing people to focus on something like the affinity economy, where creators and traditional media players all operate on the same platforms all the time. And really, all that matters is the nature of your fandom, the nature of your relationship with your audience. The key important factor is that ZDF, ARD, Netflix, Amazon, Apple, whoever you are in the world, your relationship directly with your audience and your consumer now matters more than it did before.
Yeah.
You can't just push something out into the ecosphere and hope that people watch it. And even if they do watch it, you can't really call them a fan. The question is, are they engaging? Are they commenting? Are they sharing? Are they buying your t-shirt? Are they buying your merch? Are they showing up at the live show? Having a TV show is no longer enough if you are a creator of content. You have to really build out the universe around your intellectual property to super serve the fans who love your stuff.
That sounds a bit like we have to build a people's business from people to people, which I find a very constructive view to the future, if I'm honest.
It's a different way of working.
It's very different.
It's
way.
It's harder.
Because we are used to look at reach.
Right.
So just the numbers we have to, the more reach, the better
metric.
It is.
That's a vanity metric from the past. And it's also, remember that the methodology of measuring that reach is really bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, it was never really accurate to begin with. And so like chasing reach measured by Kantar, it just doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah.
It's the same thing as measuring, chasing reach measured by Nielsen or Barb. It's not really the thing anymore. It's how many people are engaging. Because at the end of the day, whether you're a news program and you want people to engage in democracy, you want them to not just passively sit there and have the stuff wash over them. You want them to get active. You want them to go out and vote, right? If you're an advertiser and you're advertising on ProSieben or RTL, you don't want just people to watch the commercial. You want them to buy the stuff.
That's true.
And so if the consumer isn't engaged in the program and if the advertising isn't contextual to the experience, it's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
And so you're wasting your money.
So where is the money in the creator economy? Where exactly in this, you call it the engagement quality, and you you try to measure it with your creator ecosphere. Where is the money in the engagement quality detail.
I think you really have to understand that moving the needle is now the new metric, right? So I like to focus on key passion indices as opposed to key performance indicators. And I do believe that you can measure passion monetarily. Mm. I did an episode of a podcast recently with Angel Studios. Angel Studios is an independent film studio, mm-hmm. like M2K or Neon or A24. But they have the highest per release, theatrical release, box office average in all of independent film because they cater to their users and their fan base in a completely different way. They call them members. Those members get votes on which films get made mm-hmm. or not. That is a whole new way of measuring success. And they measure it in dollars, in box office, in average revenue per film released, in average revenue per user. I think what you'll see is not how many impressions did we sell to the advertiser, but what is the average revenue per fan? What is the average revenue we can generate per engaged audience member? From subscriptions. Subscriptions here in Germany are skyrocketing on SVOD, on premium streaming. I mean, really growing faster than any other segment of the media economy. That's a good indication of success, right?
It is.
But I think we got used to, hey, we did advertising, sometimes we did subscriptions, and that's the whole business model. That's no longer enough. You have to sell products. You have to sell live experiences. You have to sell downloads. That is, getting somebody to be a fan means they're going to buy your merchandise.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, frankly, in the kids, I got into a conversation with somebody about the kids market recently, and they're complaining that the business isn't what it used to be. No, it's not. Because the laws changed. You can't advertise in kids' programming anymore. Yeah. Chances are that was a bad idea always. I'm sorry that your business got screwed by that, but like you're going to have to invent a new way to do it.
Yeah.
And then you look at Bluey. It's the biggest streaming show on the planet. It's a massive hit on YouTube, and also a massive hit on Disney Plus, subscription service, free and paid. Ads and subscriptions. And then you look at their merchandising business and their live performance and Bluey on Ice and all these other things. And that's the BBC. That's not Disney.
Yeah.
That's not Universal. That's not some commercial entity. That's the commercial arm, the studio arm of the BBC. The oldest, most traditional media company on the face of the earth. Look at ZDF. Look at what they're doing with their direct-to-consumer business here. Then look at what they're doing with their nightly comedy news show. They're distributing the whole thing on YouTube at the same time they're distributing it on television. And guess what? They're getting a third more audience. They're adding a third new humans watching it.
Yeah, wow.
And they're all 20 years younger than the television audience.
Yeah.
So they're generating new revenues there that they wouldn't otherwise. It is not going to be easy. This is a whole reinvention of the media ecosystem. And if you're not prepared to do that, this may not be the business for you. But if you are, it's exciting. The amount of interplay that an artist and a producer can have with their audience today is so much different and so much more educational and so much more satisfying than it was when you just pushed a television show out. You hoped the people watched it, and then some asshole somewhere told you how many people watched it based on a survey. It was such a ridiculous shell game to begin with. We all fooled ourselves into following it because it worked for a while.
That's the case, it doesn't work
anymore.
Is there any secret sauce for success in this building of a fandom ship, of this engagement quality? You mentioned some good examples in your creator ecosphere, where you say that reach is not the same as engagement quality. So are there some ingredients for a successful building a fandom ship with people?
I think there are two major ingredients. Let's say you're a producer of content, whether you're a broadcaster or a producer, right? And you have the same, you're making the same program no matter what. First, the major secret is know who your audience is. Who is this for? What do they love? What do they think? How do they act? Know everything about your audience that you possibly can. because then you can super serve them. This is a different approach. Knowing that they're 18 to 49 is not a thing, right? Knowing what part of the shows that they really like and all that kind of stuff, really getting inside the psychology of your fandom is important. And then the other secret sauce is, no matter what you make, the platform is going to have a major influence on who sees it. So if you make a comedy television show on ZDF that stars a 50-year-old average white dude.
Yeah, saw it a lot. Yeah.
Right, which is a lot of television in Germany.
That's
true. If you put that show on ZDF, it's going to get one audience. Mm. If you put that same show on YouTube, it's going to get a very different audience, mostly generationally different, right? They're younger. They have a different mindset. Will a different show with a younger host do better on YouTube than it does on television? Maybe, but know this, the same show will get dramatically different audiences on the different platforms. So know who your audience is, know where they watch stuff, know what they like, but also understand that the platform where you distribute will definitely dictate who you're reaching.
Yeah, that's true. And we're talking a lot about platforms here at Medientage too, about TikTok, about Instagram, about many others. And one platform you mentioned in your creator ecosphere, I find very interesting because we don't talk about it at all in German media industry. It's Reddit.
Yeah.
It's Reddit. It's a huge discussion platform, a huge community platform. What is the importance of Reddit for this creator economy?
I think, you know, almost every important and seminal conversation on the internet starts on Reddit.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're talking about it, chances are it started on Reddit at some point. But the fandom groups there are growing. You're talking about millions of people who congregate around topics. And, you know, individual shows have massive followings.
Yeah.
Individual films have massive followings. Individual creators and artists have massive followings on Reddit. And so it's a place where producers and creators of content can really have an in-depth conversation as opposed to just the comment section of YouTube or on Twitter or something like that. This is a back and forth. This is a dialogue. And then secondarily, as I said, the fandom there, it may not be the biggest block of your fans, but it will be the hardest core block of your fans. If you have a fandom, go to Reddit and you will find the hardest core fans there. And what they say really matters. Mm-hmm. It really does. There are showrunners and the producers who are basically changing their shows based on Reddit commentary. And it works.
Yeah,
like,
so
the fans really love
media
it.
Companies do need a Reddit strategy.
I think so. Yeah. I think crucially, media companies need a Gen Z strategy. Mm-hmm. They need a generational strategy. You know, the I think the key element here, like everything I know about Reddit, I learned from somebody who works for me who's in Generation Z. Like, I don't go there.
Yeah, me neither.
But I know about it, right? And I think that's really crucial is if you want to succeed and thrive in the next 25 years in media, hire people who are 25 now.
Yeah.
And give them authority. Not all the authority, but give them the opportunity to test and learn. Let them experiment with different things. The worst thing that'll happen is that it won't work and you'll take it down. But when you read about how the New York Times transformed themselves from a paper product delivered by diesel trucks into a gaming company with a massive podcasting business and one of the best digital subscription products on the planet Earth, one of the key things they did was hire 20 and 30-year-olds and allow them to run free. The same thing with Angel Studios. When you look at the innovations that they make on their platforms, very often it's some 25, 30-year-old engineer testing something out on the platform without permission. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, we learn from it. That test and learn as you go, take it down if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's a whole new mindset that a lot of Gen Xers and boomers are just not comfortable with. Too bad.
Too bad. That's true. So to come to an end, Evan, so when there is one thing you can say to the German media industry, because I hear the voices that said, yeah, we need rules in this creator economy. We need standards so that we can become a part of it, because we are a traditional media company and we have to work with these rules and these standards. What would you say to that? What's your message for the German media industry who puts things like that? And we need rules, and then we can play with the creator economy.
That's a great question. Well, first of all, you know, the European Union is great at regulating things.
Yeah,
probably that's true. The best on the planet Earth. And I think, you know, the entire reason the kids' business is in an interesting spot is because the regulations that the EU put around advertising in kids. So I do think there are rules in place. And I think the EU is getting better. I think they're way out ahead of the US with regards to regulating big tech and social platforms and things like that. So I think it's a misperception to say that there are no rules. There are rules. And then on top of that, I think really crucially for outlets that are mainstream media outlets like the ProSiebens and the Skies, but especially the public service media outlets, create your own rules.
Yeah.
Dictate the rules of your engagement with your audience. We will never do this. We will always do this. Then your followers and your constituents and your fans will understand what the rules are. The problem with the state of the world right now is that the mainstream publishers and the powers that be in media have resisted contributing and participating in the creator economy and playing by the creator economy rules. And so what's happened is they've ceded the entire ecosphere to random individuals.
True.
And now they're like, well, why would we go here? It's all random individuals. Well, it's only random individuals because you let it be random individuals.
Yeah.
If you leaned into this ecosphere, you would dominate. You make more content, you make better content. You're more consistent. You have rules. You have economics. You're going to dominate, but you have to agree you're going to run this race. And so, you know, the rules exist and you can help invent them. But if you're going to sit it out, you're going to lose.
So just go out and create your own rules. Evan Shapiro, thank you for being here. We are all very happy at Medientage München that you're being with us the third time in a row.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. So that's a good sign, I would assume.
I hope so. I guess you guys like me.
Yeah, yes, we do. Yes, we do. Thank you for being here. And yeah, I'm looking forward to your talks on stage today later
so
on.
Much.
Thank you. Vielen Dank, Evan Shapiro, an dieser Stelle nochmal. Das war es von mir für den ersten Tag der Medientage. Ich hoffe, ich konnte euch einen kleinen Eindruck vermitteln, was heute so los war und welche Themen besprochen wurden bei den Medientagen. Ich packe es jetzt hier zusammen, gehe vielleicht noch zur Nacht der Medien oder auch nicht. Mal sehen, entscheide ich spontan, wenn ich jetzt hier gleich rausgefegt werde aus dem House of Communication. Und dann mache ich am Ende der Medientage nochmal eine kleine Wrap-Up-Folge mit weiteren Themen. Unter anderem halt künstliche Intelligenz, ich hab's ja gesagt. Also, von mir war es das an dieser Stelle. Macht's gut, bleibt stabil und bis zum nächsten Mal.
This is Media Now, das Update für alle, die Medien machen.